gambled on thinking they could get 5 seconds or 6 seconds down the road before the end of the race, but obviously that didn't pay out.
I mean, that's what it was. It was what it boiled down to. That was a gamble.
It was a gamble.
They lost.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah, it was a gamble. They lost, and they should have just... I mean, this is, to me, what this reminds me of is that McLaren's still learning how to win. You know, we've seen that a few times this season, and you know, they haven't been in this position lately, and the people they have on the team were just, they don't have the experience.
Yeah, you could tell on the radio messages that when the engineer was giving the message to Lando, there was too much of a gap in between the plan, if you like. But if you listen to Max's messages, they were instant. They also were calling for track limits as well. You know, they were putting pressure on from all angles to make, and of course McLaren hear all of that, so that was getting in their head, and they didn't make the right decision. But Red Bull did. They didn't have to overtake again. They did it on strategy.
Well, let's enjoy this win by Ferrari, because we've been watching this all weekend where Ferrari just looked fast the entire weekend. And I honestly, if I had to pick early on, I would have said that it would have been Carlos Sainz, because he did look faster than Charles Leclerc.
He did. I think Charles had the line into turn one. You know, had the grip.
Yeah.
And he made it stick. I mean, did he make that stick? You know, going into turn two, he was 4 or 5 lengths ahead. And that was it. You know, 10-second lead. 10-11-second lead before he came in for the first stop.
Well, and the crowd you're hearing is Carlos Sainz taking his helmet off and the crowd cheering for him. I mean, there's always a lot of Ferrari fans at every single Formula One race, but this feels a little special. It's they won races earlier in the season, but it's just been a little lacking lately with Ferrari.
Yeah, they haven't got the consistency, have they?
Yeah.
And also, we didn't really realize how quick the race car was until this race here. So they've been pretty close in all the sessions qualifying. Don't forget, Sainz was pretty aggressive yesterday in the sprint race on the medium tyres. But certainly Charles done the business there today.
All right, well, let's get a quick break in. I gave you the race break free, which is awesome. But we will take a break, and we'll be back after these messages. Doing over there? All right.
What a fight you had there with Lando, your championship, right?
Thank you. I was listening to the commercials on the local broadcast. So let's see. YouTube. All right, we got some folks watching on YouTube, so let's get logged in and see.
Struggling on the braking. So that made also the
just FYI, YouTubers, we're doing two broadcasts right now. We're doing the local radio in Austin, and we're doing the SiriusXM right now. We're just local, but we're in a commercial break. And I'm going to walk next door to the booth, and I'll be back in just a second. So hang tight, YouTubers.
I think everyone's going to ask you how it was with Lando into turn 12 at the end of the back straight. Obviously, he ran wide, made the move, but it looked like you also ran up the circuit a little bit.
All right. Let's see. You know, we've got a handful of folks watching here.
I don't need to say it here. I'll let the stewards do their thing. And
let's hear this. Hold on.
A race that we learned a lot, and we'll just analyze that.
Well done.
That was Max Verstappen, of course. Ferrari flags, Italian flags waving. Can't already tell the team from the crowd.
Team congratulating the drivers there. Great one too.
God, what a great look! That's a great photo right there.
And then showing that flag will be taken back to Maranello tomorrow and put on jets, which is the factory.
Oh, that's right. The front of the factory, all the flags. That's right. Charles taking a selfie with the crowd. All right, we're going to fade that down because we're coming back from commercial. Leave it going in the background. Hey, Grinny. What's your timeline?
Hi guys, this is Pierre Gasly and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, you're listening to Speed City Live at Circuit of the Americas. We're going to go straight out to the podium interviews. Carlos Sainz has the mic.
Result that puts us exactly where we want to in the fight for the constructors now. So extremely happy for everyone in Ferrari right now. At the same time, obviously, I knew a lot of the race was going to be decided at the start. I knew Lando and Max were going to go hard at it into turn one, and unfortunately, I got the worst of it, and I couldn't get that lead. And even though the pace from then on was really good, and I was all weekend really fast, track position is key, and I had to settle for P2, which anyway was a good race.
There's obviously a shift in the performance of the Ferrari this year. How is it to drive? And then it seems that you guys are really good on tyres now, tyre management.
Yeah, it's definitely the strength of the car this year. How long we can go on stints and how little leg we have is something that I really enjoy, and something that has made me enjoy racing a lot more this year than what I did last year. Last year we spent all of the races defending, losing position. This year it looks like we just can go on attack mode. Don't think too much about tires and just push and overtake, which is fun, no? And enjoying it a lot, and I hope it stays like that until the end of the year.
Congrats, Carlos.
Thank you.
That, you put on a clinic today. That was an amazing victory, Charles. You must feel very proud.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, very, very happy. I mean, it hasn't been an easy weekend until now. I've been struggling a little bit with the feeling with the car, but I had the confidence that in the race the feeling was better, and it was the case. So we've seen it yesterday in the sprint race. We were a bit not scared, but we thought that the others will improve a lot more today, but we still had the upper hand. So really happy with today. 1-2 for the team. We couldn't have dreamed for better.
Talk to us about turn one, the start of the race.
Well, it was a pretty good turn one. That's exactly what I wanted to do, and we've had a really good launch. I knew that it was going to be very tight into turn one. Yesterday, I was a little bit the victim of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Today, I gained from it, and that obviously helped quite a lot our first stint because we had a mega pace, and then in the second stint, it was all about managing behind, but we did a great job. I mean, the pace of the car today and this weekend overall was really, really good in the race, and that's mostly thanks to the engineers. They've been working like crazy in the last few months to bring the upgrades that we've had in Singapore and in the last few races, and it seems to be paying off. The whole team is working super well. Pit stops were really good. Everything worked out well, so we're really, really happy.
Yeah, it's been 18 years, would you believe, since Ferrari have had a 1-2 here in the US, so you must be very proud of the whole team.
Yeah, very, very happy, and now we are still targeting the title. It's a long way to go, but it's a good start to this triple header.
Great win. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Johnny Green, great job on the mics over there, you and Bob Varsha.
And don't forget Chris Medlin.
And Chris Medlin, but he's not in the room, so yes, but
no,
thank
so you.
You
don't have to be nice to him.
All right.
Hey, can you plug me in?
Yes, I thought your mic was up, Greeny. Hold on 1 second. Oh, yeah, it's not up. You're absolutely
don't
right.
Don't sound so excited, Casey.
Oh, no, that is funny. Well, let's see
we're
here.
We're having a barbecue at yours tonight, Casey.
We need to celebrate somewhere.
Well, Bob, why don't you give us a quick little minute here while I try to get Jonathan's mic going here.
Where are we on air?
Yes, we are.
Oh,
we're on live
hello,
on local
everybody.
Radio in Austin, Texas.
Hello, everybody. Okay, we'll give you an email address. We'd like to know where you think we ought to go celebrate tonight after a terrific
1-2, yes,
weekend
I'm him.
Here.
All right, we got everybody now.
I'm sure there's a lot of places that the Longhorns were going to celebrate, but they didn't need to, so they canceled.
Yeah, that's the trouble. All these Georgia fans will be rooting about still, hungover.
What a race, boys.
Yeah, and I
Austin
did,
delivered, didn't
wow.
we?
Oh, and how. I felt for Ferrari. They hardly got a look at the end. Nobody saw them, but yeah. They were doing their business, and do you know what? Kimi Raikkonen, the last winner of the US Grand Prix for Ferrari, and that was his last win for Ferrari, and 1-2, as Jensen pointed out, has been a long time coming in the US for Ferrari. So, yeah, brilliant day for them. But what a great race between the two title contenders. And a race that you could argue was won and lost in that opening salvo at the top of the hill.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, you could. But I have to say, I'm over track limits. You know, if it's pavement, it's track.
Well, if you're over them, you'll get a 5-second penalty.
Ball. Yeah, exactly.
So Dave O'Neill is sitting between us, Jonathan. And
quietly.
So when that happened, when Lando went wide, when Max pushed Lando wide, and Lando went out there and went around and kept the position, I looked at Dave and he was shaking his head. I said, what do you think? And he said, Lando's should give that back.
Well, he asked Zach Brown and the team, should I give it back, as he went up the hill, as he was under pressure from Verstappen, as he was defending from, and they said, hold on.
I asked my local team manager, and he got the call right, and I said, why didn't you text Zach Brown?
Because he wouldn't get a job at McLaren anytime soon.
I think maybe the panic set in there a little bit. You know,
yeah.
The win isn't normal, is it, for them just yet? So they were deferring between each other. They were asking, you know, what should we do? What should we do?
To be honest, it reminds me of the past Piastri situation. Will he help him in the championship? What a silly question to answer.
Exactly.
And I think McLaren are rusty at being world beaters.
Yeah, and also, like I was saying to John as well, Red Bull had it nailed. You know, they're on the blower straight away, saying, you know, he's got track limits. You know, he's definitely going to get a penalty for that. And of course, that McLaren were listening to all of that.
Yeah.
So it's getting into their head, and then that was trying to help them make the decision to put the place behind. And of course, he had no chance of getting 5.1 seconds down the road. No.
Well, I have to say, I think they did the right thing in the end. Tell Norris, stay ahead, expand the gap as much as you can, and let them put you back. Don't put yourself back, you know? Maybe we get away with it. Maybe we don't. The worst is we finish fourth either way. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So,
That was a given.
Yep.
The fourth place, unless they got another five for the track limits. But, again, that was Red Bull playing the card there.
Yeah.
He overtook off the track, and all overtaking has to be done on the track. But, of course, Max made the corner there.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, it bodes well. I'm thinking of Hamilton, obviously disappointed today, but I'm thinking ahead to what this man has done in such a short space of time for this Ferrari team. And I know it's easy to look back in hindsight now they've won first and second, but all weekend they've looked strong.
You mean Fred Vasseur?
Yeah.
Which our listeners can't see.
I'm sorry.
So we just need to identify the guy. Yeah, and I agree completely. I think Fred Vasseur has been such a breath of fresh air. And I, for one, wasn't sure he was the guy. But, boy, has he made it work.
He's made it work. He's made them communicate. He's given people open channels. I think he's done great.
He worked with Lewis Hamilton back in his Formula 3 days. So
and Charles back in his F3 and F2 days.
So I think it's going to be a copacetic team. There's going to be some nice harmony there for the start.
Yeah. Dave, that's a good comment you made just about open communications. What else do you think as a team principal that he's done? I mean, you wear that hat currently in IndyCar, and you've done it in F1. What else is he doing to bring this team together? Because it's clearly working.
Yeah, I think he's a free spirit, isn't he? He's walking around, it's a breath of fresh air. You know, he's finding out what's going on in all the departments. And quite clearly, I mean, it was reasonably easy to identify because the last guy got the sack for it.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't make a decision in the strategy. Mm-hmm. So I guess he started there and he's worked down from there. And, of course, it's paying dividends now. Look at them. They're all happy.
I would be interested to know, there was quite a few comments on the radio for Charles Leclerc between he and the team. Early on, are we going with A, are we going with B? And then he would come back on and say, I want to stick with C. Now, I know we don't know what that means, but what would you interpret that if you heard it?
Well, I think C was waiting for the others to make the move because he was 10 or 11 seconds down the road.
Right, because he kept complaining about, I can't stay out here forever.
Exactly, and then they did ask him, how long do you think you can do? And then that's when he brought in, let's go with plan C, which, of course, Norris pitted. And then 3-4 laps after that, you could see the fastest sectors starting to happen. And that was Leclerc pushing to try and get ahead or stay ahead, rather, for the stop, which he did.
Well, the podium going on at the moment, and a huge crowd invasion, as is traditional here at the Circuit of the Americas, as the hats go on for the hat dance of the top three. And the governor of Texas giving out the prizes and giving it to Charles Leclerc.
Governor Abbott giving the trophy.
Yep. Fireworks going off, the crowd invasion in full swing. But the McLaren fans, of which there are many, we saw them cheering when Norris made the move. I'm still not 100% on that, I have to be honest. I do think the team are at blame rather than Norris. He did ask, and he could have given that place back. But I agree with you. I think they were kind of... They got the willies, didn't they?
They did, yeah. And looking at the podium there, the strategists have been changed around as well at Ferrari. They definitely quaked a little bit.
Well, the other thing to think of when you add the sprint race and the Grand Prix is just what that means to Charles Leclerc in terms of getting closer to Norris. And now McLaren have got double jeopardy because they're trying to catch Verstappen, but they've also got to be wary of the fact that they're not that far ahead of the chasing man that is Charles Leclerc in third. So it's not going to be easy for Norris now at all.
No, it's uphill.
Yep. The champagne is flowing on the podium right now between the Ferrari drivers. And now the confetti.
Yeah, the two of them are hosing down the strategist who's up there.
And hosing down Max Verstappen. I think anybody within about 25 feet is getting hosed down up there now.
You need to wear your running shoes if you're a dignitary up there handing out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Bob Barsham, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
Welcome to Speed City. We're live at Circuit of the Americas, where we just watched a fantastic Formula One United States Grand Prix. And a double win by Ferrari with Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, 1-2. It was a fantastic race. This is John Massengill joined by Jonathan Green, Bob Varsha, and Dave O'Neill. And we're in the booth still in Circuit of the Americas. And the champagne is flowing on the podium and the confetti. And, guys, Jonathan, I'll start with you. It was a fantastic race, fantastic weekend.
To celebrate the 12th year of the Circuit of the Americas, we couldn't have asked for more. Perfect weather, huge crowd, and more importantly, the performers acted brilliantly. They were superb. Fantastic performances throughout the field, not just a Ferrari 1-2. A great race between the two competents for the title. But it also, we say we've been talking all weekend about Red Bull and McLaren, but now we should be talking about what Ferrari can do from the position they're within now. After that, especially Charles Leclerc, who moves so much closer to Lando Norris than he was before, with that win and with an excellent performance by both Ferraris in the sprint race.
Bob Varsha, what about you? What's your first impressions here?
Don't ask me questions. I'm trying to do math in my head. But I think what the bottom line is going to be is that Ferrari is going to pull into striking distance of Red Bull in the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, 504, 496, yep.
Does that live now, Jonathan,
yep.
You think? Yeah,
I think
okay.
So.
I mean, that is awesome. Three teams in that battle for the championship over these last five races.
And with sprint races to come, I mean, Ferrari could get one sprint race win and be with Red Bull if they have a problem.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, no kidding.
It was a terrific race all day long. Ferrari just... firing on all cylinders, as the cliche goes.
Dave O'Neill, we were talking right before we went to this broadcast about the fact that Ferrari was really not even on the screen as we watched Max Verstappen and Lando Norris go wheel to wheel and battle. And then the big moment came, finally, after Lando chasing Verstappen for so long. Lando ends up going around Max on the outside, and then Max pushes him off the track. And I looked up and said, you know, and then, of course, Lando went ahead and took the lead off track. And I thought Lando was going to just go and win the race. And I looked at you and you said, it doesn't look like that's going to happen, because you predicted that as exactly what happened, that there would be a 5-second penalty.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. fortunate. Again, you know, we talked about the move was done and completed off the track. And what he should have done was, he knows now, was given the place straight back and then attacked again the next lap. He had four laps to do it in. And he knows the penalty's 5 seconds. So does the team know the penalty's 5 seconds. They should have been on the horn straight away and given that instruction.
Mm-hmm. And, Bob, it didn't look like there was enough time for a chance to gain the 5 second to be ahead of the 5 second penalty.
Well, no, we didn't know that until Norris got by, because we thought he was quicker than Verstappen. The question was, how much quicker could he get by? I argued when we came in here, Jonathan and I, after the race, saying they did the right thing. They just said, let Norris go and hope the cards fall your way. The worst is you finish fourth. But now, listening to Dave, I think I'm wrong. I think he should have just dropped back behind him, because hopefully he had that little margin of performance that would have allowed him to pass Verstappen legitimately before the checkered flag.
And we're watching a replay of it as we speak.
What I don't like about it is that I, at the time, said in the commentary that Verstappen went all four wheels off two. It's not like Verstappen made the corner.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I don't. Why I have a problem with it.
But the overtake was done off the track.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep.
So, yes.
Yeah. It's unfortunate and also kind of difficult to come to terms with, but you know, Max played the card. He pushed Lando off. He knew he was going to make a move. There was four laps to go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Jonathan, I think we just made a clear illustration why you and I are in the booth, and Dave is the team principal.
Yeah, that's why he gets the big bucks.
Oh, yeah, you know, there's plenty to talk about here, though, guys.
Yeah,
we haven't even gotten down the grid yet. But go ahead, Bobby.
I saw in the highlight package that Formula One, F1 TV put together, and they are brilliant at those sorts of things. I saw that shot of a very forlorn Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
Hands on his knees after he threw his car into the gravel trap and could not get it out.
Yeah, he'll perk up when he knows that both the red cars were first and second, though, and that's what he's going to be driving one of next year.
That's true.
Yeah,
good point. Very good point. But that looked quite familiar, didn't it, Jonathan, where Hamilton went off at 19, just like Russell.
And it was one of those, innocuous again. Nobody else to blame for it, just a little too hot, would you agree? He didn't even hit the rumble strips on the inside, which is often a case of unstable in the car, but he didn't touch them.
No, I don't. Hopefully, there's nothing to answer. But they seem to be having this suspension trouble all weekend. Stuff breaking, they're talking about. And again, the same corner that George went off.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there is something to answer there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was very similar, wasn't it?
It was.
Rear
yeah.
end coming
yeah.
around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, seven times world champion don't normally make
mistakes like that. Very rarely
make a mistake like
that. Nor does George Russell. To be fair.
No.
So, yeah, not a good weekend for what started out so well for Mercedes. A real shame. And really, when you look at the board now, that doesn't say that they're out of things, but it's not looking good, generally speaking, for Mercedes in the run down to the end of Abu Dhabi.
Dave, I've got to ask you about this tire strategy. You know, none of us saw this playing out, except maybe Mario Sola, who we had in the booth earlier, the head of Pirelli Motorsports. But what do you think about the way this tire strategy played out?
Well, I think it was very interesting. You know, they had the hard, which they kept, as Mario said in the booth,
yeah.
A used hard that Red Bull kept.
Yes, that's right.
And they gave away, I think it was a new, they gave back a new soft. So, yeah, they're certainly Red Bull seem to think their car can work with a stiffer tyre.
Ironically, Hamilton's off kind of changed the strategy quickly, because they got more time on those harder tyres and more time on the medium tyres in that first stint, and so everybody was able to go longer. And when you look at what Russell and Lawson achieved on the harder tyre, I think it was 39 laps, Colapinto the same, pretty much impressive. But when you get a couple of laps behind the safety, it's always going to give you something more, isn't it?
It is, but the risk with the safety car is you've got to switch the tyres back on
right.
again, you know.
And that takes some time, yeah. Takes some energy, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But let me just run down here. I'm just going to run the whole grid, and we'll talk, all the way down, because some really great stories. Obviously, Ferrari 1-2 with Leclerc, followed by Sainz and Max Verstappen, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri, George Russell down in 6th, Perez, Hulkenberg, Lawson, Colapinto in the points, and then out of the points, 11th, Haas's favorite position through all of history, is where they end up a lot. But Gasly, Alonso, Tsunoda, Stroll, Albon, Bottas, Ocon, Zhou Guanyu, and then, of course, Lewis Hamilton with a DNF. But we've talked a lot about the top three or four drivers here. But, of course, Oscar Piastri in fifth. I mean, you know, you got to say he did his job today, Jonathan, because
yeah.
Perez is down in seventh.
Yeah, not an easy weekend for Piastri after the sprint. And, yeah, bounced back well. It could have gone either way for him, but he held in there. And good performance. And he did his job, as you say. And that is more important. And Sergio Perez down in seventh. Again, not where he needs to be. And, again, you've got to ask questions on that. I am, if I want to look down the top ten, so impressed with the two new boys, Lawson and Colapinto. And more importantly, the strategy that got them there. Because remember, Liam Lawson started 19th.
Yeah.
Scored points.
Phenomenal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
down to the team and his drive. But at the same time, to score points on your return to Formula One, you know, when you're battling under pressure like he is at a track he's never raced at, that he's got to be happy with that.
And also the distance those two went, yeah. You know, the first stint. They went so much longer than everyone else, and it played out.
And it wasn't without moment. Alonso all over him. That battle was back in, wasn't it?
Let's not forget that he's got Alonso, you know,
gunning for him.
Basically playing mind games with him is really what he was doing.
Yeah, you don't want to come up against the arch Machiavellian on the first race, do you?
He was water off a duck's back. Yeah. He did not let it bother him at all.
But I said on the way in this morning, he has had 2 years in the headphones at both Red Bull. So he'll have understood all the tactics that Red Bull do and RB. So he spends a lot of his life with two teams, and that's really matured him.
Yeah, it's fast forward his learning curve for sure. Well, but Colapinto, I mean, he just got, and again, word down the pit lane, Ferrari, Mercedes, they're all after
him.
They're all
sniffing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do Lawson any, if Red Bull mess about again, it won't do Lawson any harm, because clearly both those two young men have got a huge future.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Gene Haas is on camera at the moment. We're watching some of the highlights. And, Gene Haas will be well pleased with the weekend of scoring in both the sprint and the Grand Prix.
I joked about Kevin Magnussen finishing in 11th, because it seems like for years and years Haas has just been right outside the points there. But he's got to be pleased. You know, at one point, this could be the best weekend ever with Haas. We'll have to look and see the points, how this laid out.
In terms of performance hall, good point. Yeah.
Hey, we'll talk about, you know, we talked all about Liam Lawson, but let's talk about what happened. I'll always immediately look for his teammate. What happened to Yuki Tsunoda?
Yeah, Yuki Tsunoda had pretty much a rotten weekend, to be honest, given what the circumstances were going in. He should have played the role of senior member of RB, but instead he's on the radio saying, how did that happen? How did Lawson get ahead of me? And of course, we all knew the answer, but Yuki kind of left on it, you know, and it's not good for him.
Yeah, well, walk us through the answer there.
Yeah, so the answer is they kept Lawson out, and Lawson drove well. He did a lot of laps on that hard tire. He started on that hard tire. He tried to help Tsunoda in qualifying, so he did his bit. But they just timed it perfectly, whereby their strategy for that side of the pit lane. And by the way, Tsunoda's team didn't do anything wrong, because he was on the mediums, like all the leaders. It just didn't work out the same way, and that can happen.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the exact same thing with Colapinto and his teammate, Alex Albon. You know, talk about, walk us through that.
Well, Albon got a penalty, right? For
5 seconds, I think.
5 seconds for forcing somebody out.
Yeah. I think it was, I can't remember now.
Bottas, I think.
Yeah. But so, he got the 5 second penalty, and that put him down how many positions? Yeah, I guess that from 10th to 16th is the difference.
Yeah, and then you've got to fight your way through. That takes more tires up.
Yep.
It makes you less competitive, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, you know, for the two new boys, they've really made their mark. There's no question about it. And they haven't done it with any assistance, so to speak. And, in fact, in Lawson's case, you know, he was hampered completely by having to have that engine penalty.
Yeah, and then the two Haas cars, of course, Hülkenberg in the points in 8th and Magnussen down in 11th. I'm trying to remember. I don't think there was any miscues on the Haas team or Magnussen himself to get him out of the points. It's just kind of the speed of the car, right?
Before I wax too rhapsodic, Russell pit lane start. He's finished sixth. He got the upgrades, but that's an even better performance.
That really is.
I know he's a relative veteran now, but that's a really good performance too.
It really is.
It doesn't bode well that he beat Sergio Perez, who had zero problems, and he still beat him coming from the pit lane.
You mean it doesn't bode well for Checo?
At all, no.
Yeah. Well, think about what Russell went through, too. He had that massive crash at turn 19 and hit the barriers over there. That was a pretty serious...
Oh, yeah, nasty. You know, 125 miles an hour, they reckon.
Did we ever hear any G-force or anything? I know it was the safer barrier.
We've got the speed, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's it.
The safer barrier probably kept the G-forces from too bad.
Well, yeah, they were the... what are they called? The plastic...
Tech-co barriers.
Tech-co, yes.
Barriers, yeah.
Tech-pro, that's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm with Dave on this camp. To have an accident with both Mercedes on exactly the same corner, on exactly the same way, with different outcomes, mind you. Okay, Russell sped off into the distance. Hamilton didn't. But, you know, almost identical situations. Well, they must look into that.
Yeah, immediately, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I see that, I go... Okay, that's the car. When both drivers have the exact same error, the exact same spot, I lean towards something with the car.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about the ride heights at the beginning of the weekend. They have the cars as close to the ground as physically possible. If he took a slightly different line, went offline slightly, and the car bottomed out, that takes your steering away, you know?
Yeah.
So it basically lifts the car off the ground, the steering goes light, you don't have any grip, and you try and turn in, and you go straight on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe something like that.
All right. Well, let's get a quick break in. You're listening to Speed City. We're live at Circuit of the Americas. Just watch the USGP. Back after these messages. All right. So we're live on YouTube. Let's see if I can get the chat running. What are you giggling about over there, John?
I just love that look that she gave. I was just watching the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, no wonder.
Cowboys
you're watching
fan.
The Dallas. Oh, you're a Cowboys fan.
Yeah. I didn't say which ones I like.
Okay, that's
I like
fine,
Zeke
that's
Elliott,
fine.
But I kind of like the Cowboy cheerleaders, too.
All right. Sorry, YouTubers. I'm just struggling with YouTube out here today. I don't have my multi-monitor situation set up. But. Here we go.
It was a hell of a spectacle. And by the way, hats off to the organizers here. Everything I mean, I've been stuck in the booth, but everything I've heard from everybody around the track is that it's been next level. And I know that's a cliche these days, but just all the venues.
Okay. Thanks, Casey. Yeah, we're on YouTube now, so we're not going to play.
Yeah, yet. So I just feel like they've really stepped up. I mean, we've had times where the food's been too expensive, or you can't get a drink, or there's not enough toilets, or you're stuck in the car park. I've heard none of that this weekend, and I think that is something post-pandemic that Bobby and his team have really, really gone and worked on, is to make it better for the fan experience, and they're doing it.
Yeah, amazing. I'm still trying to get our friends on YouTube so we can chat with them.
Well... we know what they're going to say.
Yeah,
they're Andy P's going to be, we was robbed.
Yeah.
Kevin Kelly's drunk. Kevin Kelly's lost his keys.
Put the phone number out there and they can call in. And
yeah,
tell
them.
Well, hold on. Don't do that yet because I'm not sure we could possibly do that with Casey and all the other things we've got going on right now.
I think Red Bull got the advantage because they played into the Texas theme with the hats on. Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, Bill Ricker, he said, so leaving the track and forcing another driver off track is legal before the other driver takes the bait and overtakes.
that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, that's one way of looking at it.
I don't know if there's more comments or not. I can't see, and I'm sorry, guys. All right, we're about to come back here. So.
Hi, this is Max Verstappen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Welcome back. We are at Circuit in America, still in the booth with the bright sunshine blasting through the windows here at the booth right in our eyeballs. But it has been a fantastic day out here. Still plenty of fans on the front straight here, Jonathan. Look at that, man.
You
got the best seat to see the fans.
I know. There's probably 5,000 or 10,000 people right in front of the podium right now. And they do this every year. They allow them on from basically the main grandstand and from the top of the hill there. And it's a great invasion, just like they do at Monza.
Yeah, very similar to Monza. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, we haven't heard any numbers yet from COTA on the attendance. I don't think they're going to do. They typically have been doing them the next day, but I tell you what, it looked enormous. I couldn't tell you.
Well, I'll tell you where I noticed it this time, and I'm so pleased because I've been kind of banging this drum for about 10 years now, but great to see fans down at 10 and 11 on the banking there. Yep. Where they're going to build a stand, actually, for the T11, so that'll change things. But also on the inside, did you notice at sort of 8 and 9 on the inside where the superstage, effectively the back of the superstage, you can now go on there as general admission by going over the bridge.
Yeah, because that's,
and turning
that's
right.
New.
And it's, you're looking straight down at 6, 5, 4, 3, and literally as they come into 2. So you will get a great view from there, and then they go past you and up the hill.
Yeah, that is a new section there. I agree, Jonathan.
You'll see it when you see an overhead. But I always, I'm always interested to see where people, because, GA has got smaller and smaller as the years have gone on, because the suites have got bigger and bigger.
Yeah. So what do they need to do? They need to go higher.
they need to go higher. That's it. Put some more dirt down. So past this grandstand here, there's a hill on the left-hand side, and now a lot of fans gathering up there. It's great. We're watching some highlights. I'm talking about at turns 7, 8, and 9, the uphill section.
Well, we haven't talked about the Alpine cars. Pierre Gasly had such a good weekend up to this, but ended up finishing
5-second penalty, unfortunately, for him. That really put paid to him. And he also had a 6-second pit stop. Know why. Was he taking the penalty then?
I think that's what that was, actually.
Okay.
Well, No, that
wouldn't. No, he had a slow pit stop anyway.
Yeah,
he had a slow pit stop.
The math wouldn't work on that. And there was one other 5-second penalty that somebody had, and I did the math, and that worked, but it was a 3-second stop. But that one, 6 seconds does not add up. What are you giggling now? You're watching the replay?
I'm watching the replay at the start. Lawson really bulked at the start, having to go wide. It was similar to...
Yeah, walk us through that replay. There's another one.
Here's another one. Well, look, here's the Ferrari coming up. And watch this. Watch the clean air with a smile on his face from the Monegasque. Watch this. Suddenly turns in and boom! Oh, my word! I'm leading the race.
Everyone else is fighting off track.
Yeah.
It's like the seas parted.
And I hate to say it, but I did say those two components are going to be a little tentative at the start. And that's exactly... And you heard Leclerc in his interview said that was exactly what I was hoping for, was the path would open, and it did.
That's right. He demonstrated for everybody that you actually can make the corner and make a pass without running people off the track.
Well, Dave, did he run Norris off the track?
Yep.
Look, he's off.
He did it.
Why doesn't that get a penalty?
Well, it's the start of the race.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know there was an extra rule. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I at the time said,
first
well, he
incident.
Was all four wheels off, so you've got to think that Norris can do nothing at that point. And he said on the radio, he took me out. I had nowhere to go.
But Norris never overtook him.
Ah, okay.
So that's the difference. But they would have come back with lap one incident.
Boom.
Boom, yeah. Oh, look.
Bip, bop.
Cars are quite strong.
Yeah, we're just watching the different angles, different car onboards.
Well, you asked about...
We're just watching a ULD go past our window.
Yeah, I'm going to say, yeah. You asked about Albon, and that's really where it started to go wrong for Albon. That little touch there pushed him back a few places, and he never really recovered.
Let's go back to that, what you said, Dave. You said, well, it's the start of the race. And Jonathan's saying, oh, a new rule. So it's basically an unwritten rule at the start of the race. They let them race.
But actually, I was going to say, Dave's right in that there is a bit of leeway, because you are all bunched together, 20 cars. You've got to give some leeway, because things like this could happen.
Yeah.
Same with that incident. It was no further action for Albon.
Which one was that?
This one you're looking at right now, which is Albon versus Ocon.
Yeah, okay.
And, you could all argue in the middle of the race that that would have been penalized, but it was the start of the race. And that's what Dave's really inferring.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we're looking on board. Is this another start of the race?
Yeah, this is Wang Zhou. Bottas, excuse me.
From the back of the grid, yeah. We get to see all of it here.
Yeah. Russell made a good start.
He pushed him.
There's a push.
He gave him a good old push there.
Yeah,
which was that Colapinto?
Yeah, Colapinto.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Veteran move from the Finn.
And here's Joe. He's further back even. He goes to the outside, tries to avoid action. Bottas on the other side in the left.
Pushing up, pushing hard.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, the start of the race, you have to, like you said, Jonathan, have to give tons of leeway there. And, of course, Bottas.
Yeah.
Again, Max took advantage there, overtook.
So why didn't he give it back?
He did.
Look. I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Come or did down. He? So, yeah, we're watching highlights. Sorry, we're not helping you guys out there.
He's letting the
we're
team
being distracted.
Argue.
We are Labradors here in our studio. But, I would argue that there's a few rough decisions and
we're looking for
marginal.
Consistency.
Yeah, that's yeah. It's always the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. I hate to say this, but Botosh finished 17th, which is a high position for the head car right now. The
only the team salary. Without any points.
Yeah,
it's really sad. I mean, Dave, what's your take right there? I mean, it just seems like that part of the you'd think that if that part of the or equation for moving to the Sauber Audi is so bad, you think the other side would be good, but that side's not good either because there's some disarray on the. On the front office side, as you put it. So what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, no points is nothing to build on.
So, yeah.
You know, at least a point. And to get a point, you're going to need a lot of luck, the way they're looking at the minute. You know, they're well off the pace. And, of course, they're trying to rebuild. Maybe that's setting some confusion in the place with all the goings-on from the Audi management moving in, etc. And of course, we don't know how good Sauber are going to be able to react to what's going on there.
I think it's going to take a lot of time.
A lot of time.
I saw an interview with Binotto earlier today with Lawrence Barretta, and he kind of admitted it. He did not know. He said, I've been supplying engines and going over there as a Ferrari guy for many years, but of course you know nothing at that point. But when he's got his hands dirty and seeing what's under the floorboards, he's starting to get a bit more nervous, and I think it's understandable.
And of course, you know, he's come from a big team. So
yep.
To go in and understand how a small team works and then start setting about the rebuild process is a huge job.
Yeah.
Well, if you're wondering where Chris Mendel is, we're having trouble getting him connected live, but he is out there with his microphone, and he just did an interview with the boss of the Red Bull team principal, Christian Horner. So, Casey, if we got that ready, we'll fire that up now.
I've got Christian Horner here, and Christian, I'm going to start at the end of that race. Can I get your opinion on the fight between Lando and Max and the penalty that Lando got there?
Well, look, I mean, it was good, clean racing between them, and then, unfortunately, Lando, you know, he went wide and off the circuit at turn 12, I think it was. And the rules are very clear. You can't overtake off track. So, you know, it was always going to be a penalty. There was a couple of other issues that obviously were getting looked at by the FIA as well, with track limits and moving under braking. So, I think the race director and the stewards came to the right decision.
Were you sweaty on that one at all? Because McLaren didn't give it back to you, and I think Max went off too. So they were, I guess, going to argue their case rather than try and do it again.
But they probably, in hindsight, will probably wish they gave it back because they had the pace to overtake again. So, and I actually thought that was what Lando was doing at the end of that first lap. But look, it is what it is. You know, I think for us, we want to understand why we lost a bit of pace from yesterday. We just struggled with understeer today, which we didn't have in the car yesterday. So, you know, we need to understand that.
You saw, we heard a radio message to Max that there was an issue with his car, that you'd rectify the pit stop. What was that about?
That was mainly about front wing and the understeer. You could see he was struggling a lot with understeer. So, you know, one of those things. But you know what? Coming out of Singapore to come here, pole for the sprint, winning the sprint race, second on the grid for the main race. I mean, Ferrari were, you know, class of their own today. So congratulations to them. But you know, I'm pleased with Max's performance and the team's performance to have got that third place and extended the lead.
Yeah, how do you view that? You've got ahead or further ahead of Lando, but as you say, Ferrari 1-2, and they are right there with you in the constructors now.
Yeah, the problem, you know, we got Ferrari and McLaren. You can see they're running in pairs, and you know, we need Checo to find a bit of pace over the next few races, because otherwise, it's going to be impossible to defend against two cars.
And is this title fight going to get a bit tasty towards the end of the season? We've heard accusations of your car and its legality up to now before this weekend started.
Look, I'm not going to comment on that. I mean, we're just focused on what we're doing. Others can throw stones, but we'll just focus on ourselves.
Okay, thank you. What did I say?
I missed
classic.
That.
It is what it is. Interview with Mr. Horner.
Well, I was seeing a new email from Chris. He's got another interview. What did Christian say at the end there?
Well, he basically fired Checo.
Well, I thought he was going to do it earlier in the interview than I did here.
Yeah, he didn't include him in all the kudos to the team.
No.
Oh, that's what he didn't do.
Yeah, he just left him out. Here's to the end.
Well, and he said, if we've got to go better if we're going to fight two cars now. Right. To the
well, I heard that part, and then he said,
Checo's got
we're
going
to have
pace.
To.
He's got
Wow, yeah.
But interesting.
But wait a minute. Well, why now? Why is this just now happening? We thought it was going to be at the summer
break.
He says
it every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Dave?
No, I was just going to say, so I think the interesting bit was the understeer that Verstappen had, if he was telling the truth.
Yeah.
Typically, you can fix understeer with a front wing change. So they would have dialed some front wing into the car.
Not a swap, but just a dial of the ridge.
Yeah, just so, more downforce of the
more
front.
Downforce,
but he admitted what the big story for me anyway, taking away, is that, you know, to dominate the sprint as they did, Red Bull, where were they today, understeer or no understeer? Ferrari made mincemeat of them.
Yeah, maybe the heavier fuel load the car wasn't as good on.
Yes.
You know, so they had 40 kilos yesterday they started with, and they started with 110 today. So there could have been a difference there. And then as the fuel came off, the understeer started to pick up. And again, you know, he went off the track a few times. You dust the tyres up, and it takes three or four laps to try and bring the tyres back in.
Okay, well, let's get a quick break in. And when we come back, we have a fresh interview that Chris just sent in with Liam Lawson. I'm excited for that one. Back after these messages. Trying
I'm
to see the comment. Do you see any comments?
I just
now?
See Bill Ricker's comments. That's it.
No, I know there's more because I see some notifications, but
okay,
refresh.
What I was meaning.
Yeah, I've tried it. I've opened it and maybe try a different browser even or something. What's that, Johnny?
Yeah, what I was meaning with Horner is that, you know, you said why has he started saying it now? Well, if you think about it, Horner has always been in the corner of bringing Ricciardo back. That was his game plan.
Oh, right.
That's not going to happen now because. So Horner's plan's gone out the window, and Marco is all about trying to get juniors in, and so that's why he probably doesn't want Perez to stay. And in fact, I think he's been in print saying that he wanted to get rid of him after Spain. So I think that's where the loggerheads is between Marco and Christian.
And Horner, yeah. Yeah, Bill, by the way, Bill Ricker joined. I saw one of his comments, and he said, this is not what's on SXM right now because – Bill, we're actually doing multiple radio shows. That's why, and we're all synced up now. All the radios are in break right now, both local and SiriusXM. So that's why you're seeing the discrepancy, or we're seeing it. But thanks for tuning in, Bill. He's pretty loyal. He's one of our regulars.
God, there was some close racing out there today.
Yeah. Yeah, but how was the? I didn't get. You know, we were in here prepping. How was all the Masters Historic and the Porsche
good.
Cup racing?
Really good racing. Yeah, very good.
There was one big wreck at some point, right?
Yeah.
Somebody was upside down or.
One of the Porsches got turned over, but almost did a 360, but managed to just somehow land on its feet, or tires. But yeah, bit of action. He rolled up the side of another car.
I wish I could hear these ads because we've got a new sponsor, TireRack.com.
Yeah, how can we get to hear those? Because like I said, I've been listening to them on Sirius.
Coming back.
I'm Liam Lawson, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to Speed City. We are still at Circuit of the Americas after watching a fantastic Formula One United States Grand Prix, the 12th version of said thing at Circuit of the Americas. And congratulations to everybody at Circuit of the Americas, Bobby Epstein and all of his team. It was another fantastic event. And as you probably heard there, we had Liam Lawson bringing us back from the break, and Chris Medland caught up with Liam Lawson, and we will hear that now.
I am doorstepping Liam Lawson, who has just gone from 19th place to 9th in the United States Grand Prix. That's a cracking effort for Liam, trying to get out of the way of people's photos as well. How was that to be back on the racetrack and scoring some points first weekend back?
It was good. You have to give me a second here, sorry mate.
Not this guy. He's got a director of comms from Red Bull, Paul Smith, who has a fresh red pencil behind his ear. He always has a pencil behind his ear when he's when he's working, and he's got a brand new one because he's obviously been making a lot of notes. But that's meant Liam is now getting a lot of congratulations from the rest of the RB team and from Red Bull. Dr. Helmut Marko's even here as well. So this isn't a bad congratulations, is it, for someone to get from the CEO, Peter Beyer, as well as Dr. Marko. So I'll just let this play out a little bit between them as they have a catch-up. Can't really interrupt team meetings like this. Be rude of me if I were. So I'll let Liam get the plaudits from his team before we find out what he thought of that race. But it's a cracking result for him. He's wearing one of those cool packs to try and cool down after the race. It's cooler now in the paddock in the shade, but very hot for the drivers out there today. And that just one safety car early on, and then the pace really picked up after that. So they've had to earn their money this afternoon at Circuit the Americas. And this is actually the bit when they really earn their money. They love driving the cars. They hate talking to us media. So this is the bit he's having to do that isn't normally a part of the job that you find drivers really want to. But easier on a day when you've scored some good points. So we'll see what Dr. Marko had to say to Liam in just a sec, and Peter Beyer. I'll ask for the inside scoop when he's away from them. So, Liam, I'm going to ask now, what were they just saying to you, Dr. Marko and Mr. Beyer?
Good job. It was a good race. So, I think, obviously, thanks, bro.
Congratulations.
More congratulations. Can't stop him.
Thank you. Sorry. Just saying, congrats on a good race. Obviously, there's an expectation from their side for what they want me to do, but at the same time, there's an expectation from me as well, what I'm trying to do in the car, and today I think we achieved that. But obviously, we have five more very important races coming up, so focus is now on to Mexico.
You're not even gonna let yourself enjoy it tonight. You've just gone up 10 places and scored points in your first race back.
I'll enjoy it. I'll probably have some brisket. I've been craving it all week. Haven't had any yet, so yeah, I'll probably. That'll be my way of celebrating tonight, but very happy and stoked for the team. They've worked really hard. Obviously, we lost a place to Haas this weekend, but I think salvaging 2 points is really important, going forward.
And you don't have to take a rip penalty next week, so you can go even harder.
Thank God for that.
Well done today.
Thanks, mate.
Jonathan, I know you're thinking. I know exactly what you're thinking. Is the discussion we were just having about Checo.
Oh yeah,
and then now everybody's swarming Liam Lawson,
Marko, and the managing director of RB. That's pretty good. If anybody's going to be congratulating you, that's all. I would love fans to come up and say thank you very much and pat me on the back, but I would only care about Helmut Marko and Peter Baer, and hopefully Christian Horner. But we've heard from Christian.
You've been probably the president of the Liam Lawson fan club in the last couple of years.
I literally saw him grow up in front of me. And yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what, I made a point about his patience and his maturity. When I first noticed him, because he's obviously very distinctive with his blonde hair, and he looks like every bit the racing driver, but at the age of 15, he missed out on getting into Formula 3 at the Toyota Racing Series by 3 days. So he spent a whole year of a season before he got into TRS watching TRS, waiting to be eligible.
Oh, to be old enough.
Old enough at 16 go racing. So he is patient, and he's had a long time to wait, and that is like 7 years ago I'm talking about. So I do have a real soft spot for the guy because of the decisions he's made, which have been ballsy, frankly, because to take a Red Bull contract at 18 with no guarantee of anything. Mm.
Man, I'm going to have to call him for some stock tips and everything else.
There you go.
Life tips.
Yeah. Because I've always been very cynical about the Red Bull thing because of what happened to Brendan Hartley, because of what happened to Daniel Kvyat, because of what happened to Albon.
And on
Scott Speed. You name it. It's a horrible place to be if it doesn't go your way.
Carlos Sainz.
It really is.
Well, do you have a spreadsheet with
I mean, it really is, isn't it? It's tough.
Any place is a horrible place to be if it's not going your way. This is a tough business.
Yeah. Red Bull and Ferrari, though, are the worst at not giving. I mean, thankfully, Alpine have given, doing their chance. But I really feel, what about Drogovic? what happens to a guy like that? He won outright. He dominated Formula 2. None of the guys that are in Formula 1 now. He must be looking at the race today going, what happened to me?
Yeah, that is
Stoffel
just...
Van Dorn.
But look yeah. look at the, you know, we touched on all this, but if you could combine everything that Liam Lawson did this weekend.
No, it's brilliant.
You know, including finishing in the points, but including battling his own battle with Fernando Alonso. Fernando Alonso calling him the idiot in the AlphaTauri, by the way, he got that wrong. But
No, I think, as you said, I think that was another jib. That was next level jib.
See? Yeah.
He knows exactly what he's saying.
Yeah. Okay.
He's calling them the AlphaTauris, like they're
Not the racing bulls.
Oh, that is funny. All right. Well, Chris Mendon has been busy boy again because he caught up with the team principal of the Ferrari team that finished 1-2. Let's hear from Fred Vasseur.
Thank you.
Fred, I can tell you the media's nearly done for you and you can soon celebrate, but your second 1-2 of the year and you dominated this afternoon. Just how proud of your team are you?
Well, I think first, it's true that we had a very good Sunday from the beginning to the end. I think the pace was strong and the management on the race was under control. That from the strategy to the pit stop to the even from the drivers into the car, they did very well. Then it was under control. And when we have this kind of race, I think it's also much easier on that end. But it's a good weekend, very well executed with a good car.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We've seen other teams kind of fluctuate a bit this weekend. Strong at the start, maybe not so strong today. You were strong all the way through, even if you didn't get the result yesterday. Is that all about the upgrade, or is there more to it?
No, I think that if you have a look, it's a little bit like this from the beginning of the year, that you have one weekend, you have the feeling that McLaren is dominating. The weekend after, it's Red Bull. The weekend after, it's Mercedes. Then it's us. That it's. I think it's like this from the race one, huh, that if you have a look. Now we just have to stay calm, to be focused on the next one, to try to get the best and to take also to capitalize on what we did today. We know that Mexico, it's a complete different challenge with the altitude. It's much more about cooling and so, but everything is possible and let's be focused on next week now.
Yeah, your race pace the last four races on different tracks have been really, really strong. You seem to have made a step with the car since the summer break. I guess a lot of hard work's gone into that. Does it give you confidence that you can continue that to the end of the season?
For sure, we need to have the confidence with us. Huh? When you do a weekend like this with 1-2, you have to be confident. And it's also good for the motivation, for the self-confidence, but we have to avoid to consider ourselves as champion. We know that the three other teams are also pushing like hell. They are also bringing upgrades. And we will have to start from scratch next week.
Well, 8 points behind Red Bull, 48 points behind McLaren now after maximum points today for you. This title fight on in the Constructors' Championship?
Let's be focused on Mexico.
You'll never get. When will you say that you're in the fight?
The evening of Abu Dhabi. No, it's important to avoid to do a mistake on the identification of the target. Target is to do well next week. If you are getting into the pace the next couple of events, for sure at the end it will pay off. But it would be a mistake from the team to do a calculation or whatever.
Well, at least enjoy tonight. The team's earned it. Well done today.
Thank you.
All right, I want to start with Dave O'Neill because I want to ask him about what Vasseur has done. We've touched on this earlier, but when I hear Fred Vasseur talk, he's calm, he's fun, he's got a sense of humor, and thinking back to the team principals before that. And the history of Ferrari, you know, Ferrari was the iron fist, right? And Fred Vasseur is the opposite of that. And I just wonder, is just that enough? Because when he said something about the team strategy, I never got the feeling he was patting his own back. I think he was just being who he is and not playing a political game. And I think is that enough, Dave, do you think, to switch the whole corporate culture of Ferrari to a more relaxed and more better performing team?
I think so. I mean, it's difficult to say, you know, without being in there. But, of course, I think he's given free speech within the engineering department. He's also probably well-backed, so he's not watching his back by the hierarchy who employed him. He's obviously producing, which keeps the pressure off him. But I think, you know, more so, what we don't see this year is like Leclerc giving them hell on the radio about the decisions.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and I think you have now a team which is united, and they have a plan. They execute their plans, and if it goes wrong, like Plan C today, suggested by the driver, he was listened to, and it happened. You know, so I think he's given autonomy all the way around within reason. And concentrated on the areas that weren't firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, it's like anytime you bring in a new head coach in football or whatever, you've tried it the other way. Let's go ahead and just give them that freedom. And it's.
I mean, the other thing, John, you've got to remember is there's 1,200 people at Ferrari, so he hasn't gone in there and had a word with everyone. He's gone in there, you know, he's spoken to a couple of the heads of department that the issues are happening. He's trusted in them and got them to move forward. And then he's set his, you know, his men and women to go off and take care of those departments.
You know, I spent a lot of time in Italy when I was doing World Superbikes because it's an Italian-based championship, so I spent hours and hours learning the you know, Italian culture, working with them. And the truth is, the Formula One team is like UT is to Texas, like the Cowboys are to American football, but it's you could times it by 100 because you have the whole country. The Tifosi is not just a group of people, it is the whole country, and the whole country mourns, as Bob said in the commentary, Maranello's bells ring when they win. So if you are an Italian like Binotto was and those before him, Domenicali and so many others, the pressure is immense, and it's not, I mean, you can't even buy a paper without somebody going, hey, we're going to win this weekend or what? It's up to you. Whereas Vasa, I think, has that kind of air of a Frenchman going, well, we'll see, I'm just a motor racing guy.
Right.
And he doesn't, that pressure does not affect him, and it works for him, and I think it's turned Ferrari around.
And at least as important as the support of the executive infrastructure is the support of the Italian media, as he was just saying. There were so many papers, so many reporters, with so many required column inches about Ferrari. The temptation is to start turning over rocks and asking controversial questions when the team's not doing well, all that kind of stuff. How Vasseur shuts that off, I don't know. But he kind of reminds me of another Frenchman who ran that team, Jean Todt.
Yes.
Who had the backing of his number one star, Michael Schumacher, and I think to some extent Fred Vasseur has that in Charles Leclerc. So, you know, it all kind of works.
And in fact, in Ross Brawn's era, he basically made sure that all the principals were his men,
right,
not Italians.
That's right.
And
yeah,
not that any of them weren't, you know, weren't as where they should be. It wasn't like an Italian was better. But I think Ross Brawn chose to have that leadership, so that he said, okay, I'll look after the team, you keep supplying the money, we'll get you the results, we've got the driver in Michael, leave us to it. And they did.
You talk to the media, don't ask us to. Although I do think he still sounds like a cheesy comedian doing a French accent.
He does. He's not really French, he's from Newport Pagnell.
Yeah, right, there you go.
Let's get our last break in real quick, and when we come back, Chris Medlin's going to join us. You're listening to Speed City, back after these messages. Okay, Casey says we're hot. Does he have
a
camera?
Thank you, Casey.
Yeah,
I think you're pretty attractive,
Casey, appreciate that.
Okay, I think he means we're hot live on YouTube, but we can't communicate with the YouTubes. I think Bobby Epstein blocked our IP address.
I can commute with the YouTubers. Bill Ricker says, very glad to see Jenny Gow back in BBC Five Live regularly, and I'm glad to tell him that I saw her just a moment ago and welcomed her back to the fold. So, yes,
nice.
Delighted. She's
all right,
a great broadcaster.
I hear Chris. Hey, Chris, let's test your mic. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, it should be good. I think as this has been clearing out a little bit, hopefully my connection's a little bit more stable right now.
Yep, sounds good. Where are you? Here are lots of noise.
I am outside McLaren because I was trying to get anyone from McLaren, as obviously that's reaction we'd like. But this is an unhappy team, so it looks like nobody's going to speak. Kind of had a bit of a back and forth about maybe getting Zach, maybe not, but he was told not to speak to media and to calm down for a while. So, I think basically the story is that McLaren is so annoyed, or frustrated, maybe is the better term, that they're not going to speak.
Ah, okay. Well,
wow,
that's interesting.
I mean, so Andrea Stella's done, he did a quick hit with Sky Sports in the pit lane, as he often does when Ted Kravitz is allowed to go and grab him off the pit wall. And then that's been what he's told us is the only bit of media he's allowed to do for broadcast. He's doing his print media session now, but then he's heading straight into debrief. So I've been hovering here for a while trying to get the McLaren side of things because we've heard the Red Bull Christian Horner side of things. And yeah, it looks like it won't happen today, which is, you know, I say interesting. I think yeah. I'd been used to McLaren being pretty open about this stuff and either pretty punchy when they want to be punchy, but, you know, take the rough with the smooth.
Chris said he's been hovering. I thought he was going to say something else. Chris, we're down to the last. Here we go. We're coming back live, Chris.
I'm George Russell, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Thank you, George Russell.
Russell, that's big.
George Russell.
Russell, yeah. Russell. Oh,
all right. There's one person that we haven't talked about very much today. We have talked a little bit, but not enough, in my opinion. He's just leading the world championship currently. Max Verstappen. We talked about the battle, but we didn't talk about how good he did. And I was listening to you guys, and Chris, you were calling it when I was listening the most, and you were talking about how where Max was placing the car at every mm-hmm. single corner. Yeah. And, you know, Lando was behind him with DRS and had the advantage of, you know, seemed like it was inevitable that he was going to get passed, but Max just held him off, didn't he?
Yeah, it comes down to, obviously, you've got a tire advantage, and you've got to use it when you've got it. And Lando got there quickly. You notice, actually, that pace slowed as he got closer to Max for two reasons. One being that the dirty air from the car in front becomes more challenging and it kind of holds you back slightly. But two, the tyres were just then getting hotter behind another car and it makes it tougher to keep that pace up. But that's why I think we ended up with this controversy, is because you really had the situation where that was Lando's one proper attempt, like really definitely going for the move. There's times he put himself alongside, but that was always because Verstappen had covered something off. This was an overtaking move that he went for into 12 when they both ended up off the track. So I think, yeah, you do have to give, in general, you have to give a lot of credit, actually, to the way that Max Verstappen defended. The one that's causing the controversy, I think, isn't really one where you blame the driver. The driver is going to react the way they're going to react, and you leave that in the hands of the stewards. So, yeah, Verstappen went for a tried and trusted approach, I'll say that again, with his late braking and essentially running out of road himself at turn 12, and it's paid off for him. So you wouldn't stop doing that in future until the day that someone says, nope, we're not going to let that happen.
Jonathan Green, you and Dave were passing phones around like school kids a while ago.
Yeah, Damon Hill, I spent many a year because I was doing pit reporting in his era, so I know Damon pretty well, and he kind of agrees with me, which is, and I put a wry smile, because if you remember the Schumacher incident, or many of them, but the one where Damon's car was thrown in the air
in Adelaide
yeah. when they were fighting for the World Championship, 84. Which wasn't that much different than what we just saw, except they didn't touch, and his opinion was Max didn't give him enough room, and I keep saying Max was off the track. So where was Lando supposed to be at that point, given that he made the overtake and was making an overtake on him? He should have given him more room. My opinion, Damon Hill, world champion's opinion.
Oh.
Well, quite interestingly, I've been down at McLaren for a lot of this afternoon trying to get their official opinion, and they're not allowing Zach Brown or Andrea Stella to do any additional media right now, because they kind of want Zach to calm down, but also if he starts doing one, he's going to be speaking to everyone, and I think they're worried that what might be said could cause bigger controversies, because they're clearly very frustrated. But something Andrea Stella said is that they did consider giving up that place, as in they looked at the incident to work out should we consider giving up that place, and decided no, both cars went off track, you know, so therefore there's no issue, because Max has gone off too, he's not made the corner. It's not like we've overtaken him when he stayed within the lines and we haven't. Both cars have gone off, both cars have come back on, and at the point they both went off, Lando was ahead anyway. So that was their thought process with that. I do have some agreement with it. I think the big issue here is rewinding it as well to turn one, is to the start of the race where Max doesn't keep it on the track and gets ahead of Lando. And interestingly, I've just heard Charles Leclerc's TV interview while I was stood outside McLaren, where he said he expected Max to do exactly what he did. He said he can be aggressive, he's leading the championship, he doesn't have to worry too much. He can throw it down the inside. It's how he races. And I thought something like that might happen. So I gambled that I need a better exit because there's going to be a mess on the outside of the corner when those two go deep. And he said that gamble paid off today. So even other drivers who are not directly involved in it are seeing opportunities with that sort of thing and the way that Verstappen races. And Verstappen's going to keep doing that. It was interesting that in Budapest he was penalised for doing that. And today he wasn't. So he can kind of afford to risk it because he's got the championship lead. He's got himself in a position where he can take that risk. And that's put Norris on the back foot. And I think that's one of the things that's maybe annoyed McLaren more than anything. They're not angry at Max or at Red Bull in this occasion by any stretch. They're a bit annoyed at the inconsistency. And I'm now
stewarding.
Seeing a bit of back and forth going. I take that back. Actually, I saw Zach Brown in deep conversation, but I think it's someone who just got in his way and now wants a photo and they're all smiles. So it's okay. But for a split second, I was like, hang on, what's going on here? Yes, sorry. So as Dave said, yeah, it's the inconsistency that's upset them. And I think is why, because any comments they make today would be at the stewards and the FIA, they felt it's best not to say anything.
Well, what do you think?
On YouTube, Bill Ricker says, yes, exactly. Max always wants more room, but never gives it.
That's why he's champion.
Yeah.
Ettinson never gave anybody. Michael Schumacher never gave anybody any room. Yeah.
If you give, you got to take.
And it's fair to say, isn't it? These drivers, there's sometimes a lot of unwritten rules in racing, but there's some written ones as well. And the best drivers are the ones that exploit them to the absolute limit, to their own advantage. But they're doing this at 200 miles an hour, you know, breaking at millimetre points on a track to work out, reducing a bit of brake pressure to run a car wide, whatever it may be. But they're still doing this with high skill. It's the way they're choosing to race. And Max has been actually a very good exponent of the way the rules currently are and letting it work for him. And until he's told, no, that's not allowed, or he gets a penalty for some of the moves, he's going to keep doing it. And you can't criticise him for that.
That's how he won his first world championship.
Yeah, which was the moving under braking.
Yeah.
You know, that's he found an advantage there and he carried it on for, you know, the season. And everyone talked about it, moaned about it, but he got away with it and he did it, you know.
Back in the Schumacher days, he was notorious for slashing across at the start. And some people started grumbling about gentlemen's agreements and so forth. And Schumacher said, basically, there are no gentlemen's agreements, no unwritten agreements. The rules are the rules, and that's all that matters. And if the rules don't say anything about, you know, what I cannot do, then tough.
Tough noogies.
Mm-hmm.
Drivers and Constructors' Championship, we're down to, I mean, look at this. Ferrari now 496, only 8 points behind Red Bull. And, of course, McLaren with only 40 points ahead of Red Bull.
No, we're going to take away what Ferrari have achieved this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, and they looked good all weekend. We've been talking about it the whole time. So let me ask you this. Hey, Bob, what do you think? Do you think that Max sealed the Drivers' Championship? I mean, it's five races. I mean, I shouldn't say sealed. But he went a long way today by not allowing Lando to chop into his lead.
Right, yeah. Well, the old rule is take what the race gives you, and Max did that today. No, I don't think he clinched the championship in any way, shape, or form. I mean, anything can happen still. He could have, you know,
DNF.
Another DNF. Right. I mean, this thing could go away in a couple of races.
I take away the words of Chris Medland, the sage that is, who before the weekend warned me and the rest of the world that this could be a pivotal weekend. If it's good for Max and he extends the lead, that could tell you a great story. If he doesn't and McLaren have a bumper weekend, then again, McLaren were going to be in ascendance. Now, he didn't get it right because it was a 1-2 for Ferrari, and now they come into play, and I think he would agree. We're now looking at a three-way plan for points being decided and people taking away points. I don't think Ferrari are going to win the championship, but I do think they are going to take important points away from both the other two.
Why are we talking about Chris? Well, he can't hear us. Chris, defend yourself, Chris.
No, I thought he was backing me up in some sense, by the way, it's going to play out.
Well, that's nice things about
called him the sage.
But I agree. I was talking about it with somebody yesterday, as unrealistic as it is. But in fact, I might even have been on this show. I've done a lot of talking this weekend, I will admit. So sorry to anyone who's had to put up with that. But it was that imagine you're gambling in Vegas, and it's like you can kind of hedge your bets and just kind of edge your way towards the result and just try a little bit here, a little bit here. And that's what it looked like McLaren might be able to do with Norris for a while when they were just taking 7-8 points a race off Max and had a quicker car. But now that everyone's on a bit more parity, yeah, it means they can't do that. But what they can do is potentially have some big wins somewhere where just one weekend where Piastri has a good weekend, Norris has a good weekend. Say, for example, Mexico, the car suits the Ferrari and the McLaren better than the Red Bull. And Max ends up down in fifth, maybe even sixth or seventh, involved in an incident or has a bit of an issue. And Lando wins that race, but you've got quick Ferraris in there too. Big point swing. And it really opens it up again. So while this has the ability to kind of just drag the season out to a fairly tame ending, if it stays this way and there's not a big points difference, I feel like it's created the potential for bigger ones than we had maybe immediately after the summer break. So it could still play out in a way that creates a lot of drama late in the season and could take it right down to the wire. But at the same time, if you're Red Bull, you'll feel right now that a calm end, if you do everything right and execute well and you get the most out of your package at the remaining races, you should get over the line with Max.
Well said, Chris. Well, we are just about out of time. We got about a minute and a half left, but I still can't believe that this is in my city, that this event, this almost a half a million people was right outside.
Wait, you're from Austin?
Can't you tell by the way I talk?
Austin, Texas, baby!
No, but I just, it's amazing to me. It really is. I always get this way at the end of the USGP because it's just mind-blowing.
It is one of the biggest sporting events in the world now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to thank everybody, Jonathan Green, Bob Varsha, Dave O'Neill. You didn't even have to be here. You just love hanging out with us, I guess, or something. I don't know.
I love it. I'm Chris, from Austin, Texas.
Hey, that sounded.
Well, he got off the bus. He came to Austin doing Formula One, about to go to Mexico, and he fell in love and got off the bus.
Yeah. Yep. And Chris Medlin, thank you. And you know, speaking of Mexico, don't get too relaxed, boys. We're about to do this all over again.
I know. Bob's heading there now.
Yeah, that's right. Bob's headed down there. Bob, what are you going to do down there?
I'm going to do the same thing we did right here.
You do the PA.
Yeah,
okay.
Do the PA in two languages.
I'll see you down there, Bob.
Beg your pardon?
I'll see you down there.
Oh, absolutely you will. They have wonderful food in the press room in Mexico.
Oh, good.
Except they don't call them Mexican restaurants. They just call them restaurants.
Hey, I've got a final thought for you. How about this? Carlo Pinto is now 18th in the championship with 5 points. He's only a few points away from his teammate, Albon, who has 12.
Wow. All right, we're done.
Sign
Thanks, everybody.
Up. Sign him up.
We'll talk to you next week.